Hello and welcome to The Debrief, my podcast. It's Dave O'Neill here, and thanks for tuning in. Normally we do this podcast after gigs, where we go to a gig and do a stand-up gig, but gigs aren't happening in Victoria. We're the COVID state at the moment, so I think they're starting to open up again in WA and Brisbane, which is good, but certainly not in Victoria. So I've been taken to just ringing comics and seeing how they're going, and it's been good because I've had an opportunity to ring people that I know quite well, but I don't necessarily do live gigs with. And so that person that comes under that category is none other than Sean McAuliffe, who I've known for a long time. And I thought, why not get him on the podcast and see what he's doing? Because I know he was doing Mad as Hell. Anyway, let's ring him. Let's ring the great man, Sean McAuliffe. See how he's going.
Hello.
Sean, it's Dave. How are you?
Dave, good to hear. Yeah, I'm well. Thank you. Thank you for your nice comments about Milo.
Yes.
You were catching up on some Mad as Hell, were you?
Yeah. So what happened? I saw it live and then Kieran's been watching it. We're recording too, by the way, Sean. So we're straight into it.
Oh, okay.
So don't do your usual racist, you know, raves that you normally do.
No, just our usual terrible conversation that would, you know, if heard by the public, would get us into trouble.
Yes. So I was watching it, and then Kieran has been watching it and was showing the kids, and then she went back to the Milo catalogue, the Full Frontal days.
Oh, God.
The ballet one.
Right.
Yeah, you know, all the classics.
That were. I must admit, I was slightly, because it had been so long since I'd done it.
How long since you did Milo Kerrigan?
Well, not like a full-fledged
10
proper
years?
Sketch. I think I did him in the, we did a New Year's Eve show on Channel 10 back, it would have been 10 years ago because it was 2010, I'm pretty sure. It would have been the end of that year. And Francis and I had a crack at him and we showed it in front of the audience. And they were so young, they were basically talk about your generation audience. And they were kind of slightly amused, but it was, I think they were more bemused than amused. I don't know what the hell it was. So doing it on Mad as Hell was probably suited to the audience. They might remember him.
I've got a bit of a clue. I just saw one of your younger cast members put a tweet out. I think it was Tosh Greenslade. Is that his name?
Yes.
Saying that something big is going to happen tonight. Make sure you watch. And in the back of my mind, I thought, I wonder if Milo's coming back. And yep, it was Milo. But
sure
it's still funny. I remember for people who don't know, Milo Kerrigan's a character that Sean does. Well, it did. Full Frontal was where it made its mark, wasn't it? Really?
You really explained exactly what we're talking about. I think they might have been able to work out that they probably don't know the character, but is this the way this happens? Is this your podcast? Is this an indulgent conversation that has no helpful footnotes at all, and people just sink or swim?
Yeah. Oh, someone said, it's a bit in, isn't it? Well, no, that's exactly what it is. This podcast. So we just talk about comedy, Sean. We don't.
Oh, okay.
It's not personal. Don't worry. You're not going to have to break down your life. And
you know me like a. For the audience, listening there, we started. Dave and I started Full Frontal at about the same time, didn't we? I think we were first. Yep. We were the only two newbies that were on.
93. I was 93. Yeah. Were you 93 or 94?
94, I started 94. So you might have been already there for a previous season. So
I started the end of 93. Yeah.
You were the old hand and I was the young kid turning up in a straw suit and carrying a suitcase. And, I wanted to make it big in Hollywood.
That's right. Because and Gary McCaffrey, who you still write with, who's in... He's in Tasmania now because of COVID. We can't talk too much about him. he was one of the main writers on Full Frontal, and he brought you over from Adelaide because you were uni friends or something, is that right? Or
Yeah, well, in fact, we went to the same high school. He's a bit ahead
Really?
of me. Yeah, he was a bit ahead of me. Like, so I didn't know him at high school, but when I caught up with him at university, he was a year ahead. So I never actually got to spend time with him in high school. He's a big, you know what it's like when you're young.
Yeah,
If you're a
yeah.
year older, that's forever,
It's a big gun. They're big guns. Yeah.
2 years older maybe he is, and still is 2 years older. Remarkable, remarkably consistent. Yeah, and I think he certainly was responsible for me working there. You had to make your own way because you didn't know
Well,
anybody, I don't
yeah,
think.
and I was just thinking before I talked to you, a lot of people came and went in that writer's room. So it was, I wouldn't use the words ruthless, but if you couldn't do it, they just got rid of you. If you couldn't write sketch comedy, they showed you the door.
Was my first experience in a writer's room, so I didn't know any better. But looking back on it, I think it was huge. Like, we used to have these massive meetings in a giant conference room
Yeah.
with Andrew Knight, who was responsible for Sea Change and
Rake. Rake. He writes
Rake, and
Rake.
he, you know, and
He
he,
wrote that
he's
movie with
written.
Russell Crowe where he successfully sued Russell Crowe.
Oh, did he? I didn't know about that bit.
The Water Diviner, was it?
I didn't know that he sued him. Did he really? I see this is a fascinating subject for a podcast. Therefore, you'll avoid any detail that'll be interesting. I didn't
He
know that. Well, that.
successfully, it was in the paper. Yeah, he
Oh, I didn't
successfully,
know that.
I don't know, something about the script or something like that. I don't know. But he was
There you
quite,
go.
he was quite, I'm not into detail, Sean, but he's quite, people can Google it. Andrew Knight, Russell Crowe. But he was quite formidable because he, unlike these days where I've been in writers' rooms where the person in charge is like, oh, that's not a bad idea. We could possibly, you know, they're a bit more, these days are a bit more, I don't know, new age in their approach. But back then, Andrew Knight was just like, nah, don't
It
like
was
it. No.
pretty tough, and he would go he'd go around this enormous table, and there must have felt like there was like 40 of us in there, and you would pitch basically the sketch that you might were thinking of writing, and then yes, he would do a thumbs up or thumbs down, Joaquin Phoenix style,
Yes.
being a Russell Crowe. He would kind of be a Caesar on it. That was just the way it was. And I remember you and I always tell a story. You and I, my first memory of you is we must have had a chat and got together, and we wrote a sketch for Eric Bana, who later became, I don't know if you heard, Eric made it pretty big in Hollywood.
He did.
Not as a result of the sketch we wrote, which was a parody of the then current release, I
Yes.
think it was, of Cliffhanger. So that makes it 1994 or 95,
Yeah,
I
so
think,
that's
you and I.
Sylvester Stallone
Yes.
movie. Yeah, and I remember when you turned up, and also then you had a fairly quick rise because you started doing voiceovers, maybe, and then you got on screen, didn't you? You got on screen.
Yes. There was a fellow called Pip Mushin, I think his name was, and Pip was in charge of all the voiceovers. And
That's right.
I'd been Glenn Robbins, because you and I had also worked together in Jim Owen, which is
That's
probably
right.
why we knew each other before we started Full Frontal. And we were kind of dragooned into like background work or little
We
supporting
played
characters.
seagulls. We played seagulls in the Jermaine show.
We did. That was the first time I was working with you, and you and I got to act like a seagull next to Glenn Robbins, which was, the high point. Probably still is the high point in my career, not just then, but now as well.
And also, it's
And
been
then.
mentioned before. Hang on, we had a chat. We played Mexicans, and
We play Mexicans, and because we didn't know the Mexican, we didn't want to do a parody of a Mexican by making up the language. So I just shut up. But you just kept calling me gringo, and gringo of course is Mexican for non-Mexican. That's the word you use when you're talking about a non-Mexican. So you weren't really helping me at all by keeping reminding me that I was not actually Mexican.
I was just trying to get a line in, I think, what the story was.
But those early
And then
days
you
in the
moved,
mid.
and then you started doing a few small parts, and then it just grew and grew. Is that right, by my memory?
Well, part of the augmenting our meager income as writers was to occasionally appear in the background. So you can see me, and you probably, in quite a few Full Frontal sketches, just like holding an umbrella in the background of a golf sketch featuring Eric and Glenn Robbins or something. We'd be there just making up the numbers, essentially.
And often
And there
I
was
would
a.
play a fat guy because there was no Ross Williams was it Ross Williams was the only larger man, and he didn't want to play fat people. So Doug would bring me in to play the fat loser, which became a series of sketches that someone's recently put on the internet again, where it started with a sketch where I walked into a gym and Kitty Flanagan was behind the counter, and I said, "I'm here for my assessment." And she goes, you're a fat loser. And that was the sketch.
So you couldn't do that now. Those were the days. Those were the days. In fact, I remember you were very svelte and you deliberately put on weight. So you
could play that role. Yes. Hoping for a comeback very soon. Well, you entered as a writer and you left as a star. I entered as a writer and left as a writer.
No, that's not true because you went on and produced Full Frontal after.
That's true.
You were then head of the writers' room. Yes. And you then that very benevolent character you were describing as the New Age head writer. Yeah. That's you. You're just describing yourself. You're a lot kinder, perhaps, to your underlings than others might have been.
Because you were a head writer too for a while on Full Frontal.
Oh, you and Gary.
Actually, yeah.
Now that you mention it, I've forgotten about that. Yeah, we were in charge for about one season while they're off doing something else, and then when that fell through the roof,
they came back.
And they came back, and we got kicked out of our job. But we'd effectively halved the ratings of Full Frontal during our time there, and I don't think they were very grateful.
I remember writing with you and Gary. I was because we wrote a series of sketches based on Melrose Place. I was brought in as the person who was the expert on Melrose Place because neither you or Gary watched Melrose Place. But there was also that controversial one, which is about Afghanistan Place, or someone wrote, I can't, Kabul well, Place. There were two different sketches.
You've just admitted that you were responsible for writing those, and now you're denying that you had anything to do with the one that was set in a Muslim country.
I didn't write that one.
Oh, okay. All right. Because I remember, just nobody wrote that one.
No one wrote that one. Because I remember when that went to air. And so a gangload of youth turned up to the reception, wanted to speak to the writers of that particular sketch.
Well, in defense of whoever wrote it, who we don't know, the thing that caused the outrage was an ad lib on the part of the actor playing one of the characters. You might remember an actor who we won't mention, but her name's Julia Morris, decided to to ad lib. She decided to ad lib, and I think she said something she shouldn't have, and I think that's what caused the outrage. A very minor consideration back then, but enough to warrant some sort of response. I think to today there'd be absolutely huge, and fair enough too, though.
Yeah, well, you could do. I mean, I was trying to think. Someone asked me the other day. In fact, Husey said it was amazing. It's amazing that you never blacked up in your career. You've never blacked up, have you? He was trying to put it to me that I have blacked up, and I've never blacked up. But there was definitely blacking up in Full Frontal, wasn't there? I can't remember particular cases, but surely there was.
I can't remember.
I can't remember. I remember there was on The Late Show and stuff. There was blacking up on that show, but Full Frontal, I can't remember it happening, but it might have. Sure, it would have.
We'll have a look. We'll get the DVD and have a bit of a watch. We'll just pause the tape.
I can't really be bothered. But and so anyway, from there you moved on. You did your show on the ABC, the sketch show, which was successful.
Program. I did, yeah. That's right. I mean, you and I worked together on that because we were a writer.
I was a writer, but I was also the warm-up man too for the
first two series. And then Husey took over.
Oh, did Husey take over? Yeah, right.
Yeah, Husey. You got understandably tired of it.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit of a, you know, it's kind of, you got to kind of do the same material each week.
And it's a tough job.
It's not quite the same as doing it.
I also got a child stalker out of that job because one night, I can't remember, his name was Tim, I think. And one night, I used to talk to the crowd a lot, and there was a kid from Geelong called Tim, and he would have been about 10. And I was talking to him, mucking around, and the next day my home phone rang. This is before mobiles. And I was in the phone book. And I go, you know, Dave speaking. He goes, "Okay, it's Tim from Geelong." I'm like, "Who?" He goes, "I met you last night at Full Frontal." Oh, no, Sean McCaleb's show. I'm like, "Oh, right, Tim. Well, why are you ringing me?" "Oh, I thought we could be friends." I said, "Nah, Tim, I'm like a 40-year-old man and you're a 10-year-old boy." Anyway, he kept ringing. He kept ringing until, and then one day he would ring from public phone boxes, reverse charges. So the I don't know if you remember how they used to work. The operator would ring up and go, "We have a reverse call from Tim from Geelong," and I go, "No," and I'd hear him in the background going, "Oh, come on, Dave."
that's interesting. You know, he'd be in his 30s now.
Yes, I've since met him at a gig, and he was very embarrassed by it.
He's still into, I take it he was just into comedy, you know.
He loved comedy. That's a
really interesting thing because, you know, that becomes currency when you're a kid and you discover things that you find funny, you know, it really hits you personally. And so you and I would have gone through the same thing probably at that age where I don't think we would have got a chance to actually visit a studio or the people involved, but, you know, that's why we get into comedy. And I'm sure, so you met Tim again. And he was at a gym, is it?
No, at a gig. He was at a gig.
At a gig, yeah. And was he performing or was he still a fan?
Still a fan, but I remember it all went away once my wife Kieran got on the phone and told him off one day. And
he was after a father figure or something. He probably had, you know, need in his life for a mentor.
He said he didn't have a father at one point. I'm like, well, yeah. And anyway, so she had said, stop ringing, all right? Like, you know. And then I talked about it on radio about 2 years later, and then I got home and there was a message on the answering machine. It was just Tim going, "It's Tim, I'm back."
So in all that time, despite what had happened, you didn't change your number. No, you only got yourself to blame.
It is right. Well, actually, who were your comedy heroes growing up? Sean?
I was a big fan of Jerry Lewis.
Oh,
And I one of the great thrills of my life was where he came over and he was performing at Crown. So he's probably about 72, let's say, years old. And I was doing Sea Change at that point. Andrew Knight, kindly, you know, there we are saying Andrew was a tough taskmaster.
You're one of the love interests on Sea Change.
He lowered the bar enough on his own show to have me come into it. And he said, "Yeah, no, take a day off." So I flew to Sydney and I got to interview Jerry for the
For
the Age. So we spent a bit of time. We talked about his career and everything, and he was an absolute pussycat. There were occasions I could see when I was in his orbit that he was kind of prickly to other people. But we got on like a house on fire. I mean, essentially we're talking about him and I.
Yeah, and you're a fan.
I'm a fan. I didn't have any notes or anything, so that was great. And I was also a big fan of radio comedy too, like, you know, like the Goon Show and Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan and that lot. So I suppose I ended up having this love of physical comedy from watching his films, and then probably more writerly in terms of the stuff I was listening to on radio. It's a little more cerebral and you've got to make pictures yourself. So I think it was the first time I think I appreciated that someone had written it, because they tell you in the credits, on the radio credits, they say written by Larry Stevens and Spike Milligan. And you go, oh, okay, yeah, people actually put it down. And so I think at that age, probably Tim's age, about 10 to 12, I'm kind of aware that there's a process that involves thinking about jokes and lines and actually having to commit them to paper.
It's interesting, so isn't it? Yeah. But as you said, we couldn't go to... You grew up in Adelaide, so all you could probably go to was a taping of Fat Cat or Adelaide Today or one of those shows.
Yeah, well, there was a... I think every state had this, a version of Bobo the Clown. I think every state had a show that featured Bobo or Bozo, depending on which state you were from. And my mother took me to see the taping of that television show.
Oh, wow.
It was called the Magic Circle Club. I think every state had a version of it. And I met Bobo because what would happen if you were in the audience, you're a bit younger than me, you might not remember this, but you'd sit in the audience and there'd be this sort of superimposed halo that would go around the studio and hover over the head of some smiling infant. And then if you had the most a beatific smile, you would be picked and you'd get to meet Bobo and answer some questions and win a prize. And I was the lucky child and I won the speedboat, little toy speedboat. That was my first time on television. So it was I reckon that would have been 60s? Probably 1960. Yeah, I was born in 62, so this might have been 66.
Can you just imagine a Bozo backstage smoking, you know, with the wig off?
Well, it was a bit, I don't reckon we had a television either. So it was a completely foreign concept. I mean, I knew what a television was because my grandparents had one, but I'd seen him on TV, but so we're seeing him in close up and in color. because of course on television it was just black and white. It was frightening. I mean, look, every clown, when you look at him close up or her, is just
scary.
This hideous thing. I think I'd been to circuses and seen them and not particularly liked them. I certainly didn't think they were very funny. But, you know, he was a TV star. He was a TV star. I knew that.
That's exciting. I mean, you know, the other thing I remember about doing warm-up on Mikhailov was that one time I was talking to another kid and I said, he started saying that I don't know why, I asked him what his dad did for a job. And he said, my dad's a comedian. I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go. And his dad was Max Gillies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was... And yeah, I met Max
that was,
later, and
that
he said...
That was Milo. That was Milosh. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah, he came along a few times.
Yeah, he loved it.
Again, he'd be in his 40s now, probably.
Probably, yeah. At least he didn't stalk me like Tim, the stalker.
No.
Now, Sean, how are you surviving the COVID? Sean, because you did Mad as Hell without an audience and all that, and you survived.
Yeah, we got halfway through the season, and then suddenly we weren't allowed to have a studio audience anymore. And I think, we just kind of had to do the show. So I say we adapted, but I suspect we just did what we would normally do. Just we didn't have an audience there. So,
but also I watched a lot of them and. But there was not even crew laughing. So did you actually? Because it was that monologue is very funny at the start. Did you tell the crew just don't laugh? Because on some shows like The Front Bar, you can hear the crew laughing when there's.
Yeah.
Did you say no one laugh, guys? You must have said.
Well, we had a discussion because we knew that there were American versions of those nightly shows that were going on. You could hear the crew. Writing staff and crew. To try, they were, doing what they would not normally do, which was audibly laugh, just to compensate. So we said, "Oh, look, I found that a little apologetic. It
you
sounds
like
a
that.
Bit empty.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think that really helped. It wouldn't have helped us. So we just said, "Oh, look, just treat it like a normal night. And of course, we have a tech rehearsal, and they hear the jokes all, and they laugh then. But then when we do the show at night in front of an empty audience, they just behave like we normally would. And I think it was probably better because, because the conceit of our show is that it's a news program. You're not going to hear the people laughing anyway. So it kind of made more sense not to draw attention to the fact the crowd had changed. We just sort of pretended we never had one ever.
Yeah, right. Okay. Oh, yeah, right. I get it. And so now you're just relaxing at home, doing some... thinking,
no,
writing, or are you doing something else?
We're back on in Mad as Hell in a month's time. So I've literally come in to the office. You know, I'm in the office writing sort of generic stuff for the show, getting ready for the next season.
Fantastic.
Yeah, things were looking up in Victoria, and we were going to have an audience of 80, been promised, but that's now been reduced to naught. So we're just going
to
do what
back
we did
to the,
before.
Yeah, back to the old stuff. Oh, that's good. You can at least do it, and people need a bit of joy in their lives.
What are you doing? I mean, apart from recording your phone conversations illegally, are you doing any sort of virtual stand-up performances online, that sort of thing?
I've done a few. I've done at least probably about 8 Zoom gigs, and being ridiculed by people like Sam Pang for them because I've just to do them in my backyard. So I did one last week, and I just. And sometimes they leave their mics open so you can hear them laughing, but sometimes they have to turn them off. There's too many of them. And so, you just do it to silence, but it doesn't worry me. I did one last week for a computer security company. There was about 30. So they left all the mics up and they were laughing. So that was fine. And you could talk to them. So, and people would yell stuff out. And so that was fine. But,
it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a different...
I'm curious about that because the nature of what we do, even though you and I approach it differently, because I'm a review comic and you're a stand-up comic, but I think we get an instant validation from the audience's response. And if we're doing the same thing, but in an abstract sense to an abstract audience, where we don't go through the actual fact of people laughing, it's slightly less satisfying, I think, in the moment. I mean, you certainly do the job and you presumably get paid you get a sense that, people respond afterwards, but it's not quite the same visceral experience that drew us to into it in the first
it's
place.
not it's not if that was the way that you did it normally, I wouldn't have got into it.
No, I think it would die out, which is a kind of a worry, really, because if there is a chance that there may well be a generation of people who have never had a theatre experience or a pub experience where they see somebody performing live. And if that disappears, then you're just left with this sort of vestigial version of it on television. You know, you'll be watching TV and you see that that's how they used to do it in the old days, but most television wouldn't have a live audience. I mean, even those big shows that don't require laughter, but certainly, you know, use applause, like The Voice or... what else we got? You know, that's
yeah,
just those
big shows. Yeah.
Big shows that would have an audience to make a noise. So they,
I think they call them shiny excitement. Floor shows, like Dancing with
shiny
the Stars.
Floor.
Yes.
That's right. Dancing with the Stars. And you and I have not been asked.
I have been
to
asked.
Perform on those shows.
I have been asked once.
You have?
Yeah, I've been asked to. And they just inquire about whether you're interested. Definitely years ago, Dancing with the Stars. Definitely the Jungle one. But mostly anything that involves being fat. So, like, celebrity.
I remember the old full frontal character.
Yes.
Still lives.
Get the fat loser guy in.
That would you do? I mean, I would have actually thought
nah.
You would be pretty good as a mover. Like, you could probably do Dancing with the Stars. That might be quite interesting.
Nah.
Not interested. Too much work.
Too much work. I just think I didn't get into comedy to dance. So
Hughesy did it. Didn't Hughesy do it quite well?
No, he didn't do it. Celia won.
Yes, he did. No, surely he did.
No,
pretty sure he did do it.
Kate did Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, I get them mixed up.
Celia Piccola won, but she's a natural mover. You look at her, you go, she's very good. I'm not a natural. I like dancing, don't get me wrong. And you've seen
she's
me
very
at a few,
funny.
You've seen me at a few rap parties. I'd like to dance.
I assumed you'd be graceful in the way of... that I remember you anyway. And Celia is very funny, and she could dance. I just see no reason
she's a good
why
dancer.
You wouldn't be crimping your, you wouldn't be crimping your style as a comedian to do it.
But surely
it
you've
well.
Been asked to be on those reality shows. Surely.
No,
well, I just
no,
think
I've
you'd...
Never. No, I've never been asked to do the dancing show, and I've not been asked to do
the jungle one.
The jungle one, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't do it anyway. But
I think they,
but it's nice to be able to say no, thank you.
My favourite one was one called Get Thin, Get Fat, where they rang me up. and they said, I remember I was with Hannah Gadsby, who I haven't seen for a long time, but we were in West Australia touring, doing a festival together. And she said, you're not going to do that, are you? I'm like, oh, I was thinking about it. So the guy said, rang me up from Channel 9, and he said, what we do is we put a really fat person with a really thin person in a house and we film it. And the twist is the fat person has to eat the thin person's food and the thin person has to eat the fat person's food. And I said, I love fat people's food. I'd love to do that. And he said, you're the fat person. So
was there a horrible pause before he said that?
I think he knew I was joking when I said, I love hamburgers and stuff. He's like, no, you're the fat person. Yeah, I get it. Anyway, and I remember...
I don't remember that show. Did that ever go to air?
Not. It was actually on cable. It was a British show that was on cable for a while, but I never saw the light of day in Australia, I don't think.
No. And what was it called?
Get Thin, Get Fat.
Terrible. Terrible.
And I just remember Hannah, I was telling Hannah Gadsby in the foyer of the hotel, and she goes, you're not going to do that, are you? I'm like, oh, nah. Because I was away from my partner, who would immediately say, don't, that's the most ridiculous, stupidest thing, don't do it. So,
well, it was good advice from Hannah, and hasn't she kicked on?
Done very well.
Done very well, she
done
has.
Very well.
Oh, yes.
I saw her brother in there, because when I was with her, I met up with one of her brothers who was working in WA, and then I saw him in Tasmania, like earlier, maybe last year. And because he lives down there, because the parents are down there, and he said, "Wow, gee," I said, "Hannah's doing well." He went, "Yeah." He goes, "Maybe you should give up comedy. Announce you're giving up comedy."
Well, I saw. I mean, I
and I said,
thought,
"It doesn't always work out like that, mate."
I saw Douglas recently too, because it's all on Netflix, and I'd seen what was the other show called? I can't remember now.
Nanette.
I saw Nanette, and I saw and I thought to myself when I watched it, because I remember Hannah when she. She hadn't been long over here from Tasmania, on the mainland from Tasmania. She was doing a gala not that long ago, really. She's, you know.
Oh, probably 10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether it was. Yeah, it could be that long ago, I suppose.
8 years.
And she was really good. You know, she was very quiet, but she was backstage, but she was really good. And I introduced myself and said hello and everything. And then, like, what seems like the blink of an eye, and then suddenly she's doing this great show. And I thought, what a great actor. That's the thing, my takeaway from watching Nanette was what a good actor she was, because she's really able to put herself in the moment of.
Yes.
I mean, she must have done those stories and told those
a lot,
anecdotes a lot, you know, absolutely. By the time she got to New York and filmed it, there is a, even with like Seinfeld's show, I'm thinking, oh, it looks a bit pat, you know, it looks like you've ironed out all the creases, and it's slick and great, funny and everything. But she was still able to make it appear as though she was unburdening
in the moment
for the first time. It was astonishing, and I'd really be interested. And Douglas was very funny as well, in a different sort of way.
So you'd like to see her act.
Traumatic.
You'd like to see her act.
I think she'd be a very good actor, and I would be really interested in seeing the next thing she does, if it involves being in a film or something. I think she's probably fielding offers, I would have thought.
I'd be a detective in like a Nordic-style drama set in Tasmania. Like, is it,
well, we could write it. We could relive the days when we wrote, you know, that thing for Eric, that sketch for Eric, the cliffhanger parody, and we'll just give it to Hannah and she'll do it. I'm sure she'd say yes, because you're an old friend.
And in the voice of Sylvester Stallone, that's the trick, you know. You probably can't do his voice anymore. He's probably not allowed.
Well, he can't do it anymore.
He was very good in Copland, though, wasn't he? He was great. I loved him in Copland.
He is. If Hannah turns it down, we'll go to Stallone. He's good at Copland.
Now, Sean, you've got to go. I've got to let you go. You've got stuff to do.
A job. I can't be on the phone all day.
I ask everyone these same questions. All right. So you ready?
All right.
This is.
Yep.
This could possibly get personal for you. What was the last thing you cooked?
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. Probably salmon. I'm cooking a lot of fish lately, so I'm absolutely certain there would have been salmon.
Okay. Remember when I came out to your house for a barbecue? Remember that? And
I did. You did nothing but complain about the sausages.
Yeah, they're undercooked.
We gave them to you, and you took them. You didn't say, no, thank you, I don't like the way you cook the sausages. You took them, and then you just threw them away.
No.
That's what you told me later.
I think I talked about them on the radio. Oh, I threw them in the bushes, possibly.
You threw them in the bushes, probably on the way out.
Cool. What was the last thing you watched or listened to? Do you watch stuff with your kids? I mean, your kids are sort of grown up now.
Grown up.
We've been having movie nights here, and we watched To Catch a Thief last night. The Hitchcock.
Oh, that's a wonderful film. Yeah, that's a great film.
Yeah.
Cary Grant.
Not one of his.
There's somebody I would have loved to have had his career, but he had it sadly.
At 51, he's walking around the beach in his bathers, and he looks good. I looked up his age. I was so intrigued. By how old is that guy?
You've fallen in love with Cary Grant,
and then he's talking to the mother and the Grace Kelly and her mum, and he's romancing Grace Kelly. But I'm thinking he's more the age of the mother. Like,
well, the mother, this is Jessie Royce Landis is the name of the actress playing his mother.
She's very good.
She's in fact younger than Cary Grant.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a trick.
She also played his mother in North by Northwest.
We watched that too. That's better than To Catch a Thief, I thought.
Oh yeah, it's much better. Yeah, much better.
Better
film.
Twists.
Yeah.
Do you school your children in films? You sit them down and have.
Well, we in the very early days when they were younger, they were very keen. They liked Laurel and Hardy, and they liked Charlie Chaplin, particularly The Circus. You know, so I'd show them those films, and they really thought they were funny. My middle boy, who's now 20, is studying film and TV direction at Swinburne.
Right.
So he sort of got into it. He really wants to do it.
Would you help him out? Would you ever? Because my wife has said to me, I don't want you. If your kids decide to go to showbiz, I don't want you to help. They've got to make their own way. And I'm like, no, stuff that. I would have loved someone to help me. If my dad was a comedian or anything in showbiz, that would have been very handy. Don't you reckon? Someone to
I
help
think
you.
If you think back to all the things your father has done for you in your comedy career, I think you've done very well out of him already, even though he's got nothing to do with comedy.
Yeah, he's been on sketches and
he's basically you dragged him into show business. Yeah. I can't think Are your children at all interested yet? They're all grown up now,
Oh,
probably,
no,
aren't
my
they?
kids aren't grown up. Mine are
15?
11, 14, and 17.
Yeah, that's kind of growing up there. So your oldest boy, is it oldest boy or
Year
girl?
11. No, yeah, Jazzy's 11. Sorry, year
Yeah,
11.
that's
Year
right.
11.
Year 11, okay. So it's a tough year with
Yeah,
COVID-19 and
tough.
everything, but not as tough as next year's going to be. What does he want to do? Can you say on the
No,
telephone?
I don't know what
You don't know,
he doesn't want to be a comedian, he's told me several times. And then my wife goes, "Yeah, you don't want to do that. That's no good." It's like, "Hey, I'm in the room, paid for the house anyway."
I can't imagine you'd be disagreeing with that, though. You wouldn't be trying to get him into the business. I certainly didn't encourage him. I mean, I wouldn't dissuade them if they really wanted to do it, but
No, I'd encourage them. I think acting's hard, but I think comedy's a bit easier because at least you can, well, apart from now, you can always get work as a comedian if you're any good, or a writer. Become a writer,
I always describe you as the James Brown of Australian comedy. You are the hardest working man in show business, and which is interesting because the persona you project is somebody who,
Very lazy,
you project that, but you would do more work, when the audience is up and running anyway. You'd be doing more work than anybody, I would have thought.
I do a lot of gigs, but yeah, not anymore. But yeah, I do like to work.
Yeah, it's a
You've
great ethic, great work ethic.
been given this opportunity. But yeah, well,
And you.
look at someone like Peter Hellyer. I was talking to him the other day. He does a project. He writes kids' books. He was doing a sitcom, and then he was doing something else. It was like, oh my God! And stand up on top of that. Like, that's pretty good. That's
Well, you know what
impressive.
they call you in the business, and probably behind your back, you probably don't know. They
No.
call you, they t call you two podcast O'Neill, because you've got this one, and you've got that one with Glenn Robbins.
I've got another one with Kitty Flanagan. I've just
Oh,
started
really? I didn't know that.
about junk
Three
food.
podcast O'Neill. What's it called?
It's called The Junkies. It's about junk food.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably don't partake in junk food. Remember me back to the full frontal days. You'd often have a banana for lunch.
I still do. I still love a banana, and I don't. I think the last time I had a fast food outlet item would have been like a hamburger or something. Might have been when in my 20s,
Wow,
I think.
we're talking more snack food like chips and lollies is what we talk about on our podcast. That's what we
Oh,
really
okay.
like. But you wouldn't
Well,
have
of course
them.
you and I both remember Kitty from. In fact, you would
From
know
frontal.
Kitty probably more continually than I had, but yeah, we met Kitty on the full frontal. So there you go. You've come full circle.
Yes.
Normally, this would be the point where you'd say, "Well, we've come full circle." If you're a professional, you'd be winding up at this point.
Hang on, you haven't told me what the last thing you watched was. We're going to wind up. What was the last thing you watched?
The last thing I watched was probably the final episode, episode 9 of Watchmen on
Oh, yeah, that
Netflix.
was good. I watched that. That was good.
Fantastic series. I'm not familiar with the graphic novels
No.
or the story at all, or I certainly didn't see the film that had come out. But this was just brilliantly written, and I'm a big fan of Jeremy Irons.
Oh,
But
yes.
and I was really surprised to see Lew Gossett Jr. I don't think I've seen him since An Officer and Gentleman.
Who did he play in it?
He was the old guy. He was the
Oh, he
105-year-old
fantastic.
grandfather.
He was
Yeah,
great. No, I
he was
liked it.
good. Yes, yeah.
That was a good series. And it sort of made sense. A lot of those shows don't make sense. You're watching, you go, what's going on? There was a bit of that, but then it made sense in the end, which
Yeah,
I
it's
liked.
a great deconstruction of the Judeo-Christian belief, and just perfect,
Yeah,
perfect stuff. We
really
couldn't
good.
do anything like that, you and
No.
I. I mean, Hannah and Stallone would be happy to get our cliffhanger parody, but I don't think we're capable of writing an episode of The Watchmen.
Yeah, I think no, it'd be hard. It'd be a lot of whiteboard work. Okay, last question. What was the last bit of human contact you had, Sean? Because people are in isolation. Now you're in at work, so
I am at work, but there's people in here. What's human contact anyway? Define it for me so I
just
know
when you
whether I've
last
had any.
spoke to a human.
Oh, okay. Oh no, that happens all the time. And you've got to, if you've got your family around you in your
Yeah.
house, you can't avoid them.
No, you can't.
But
Well,
to be perfectly honest with you, all this has made very little difference. I just stay at home most of the time and rarely go out and socialise, as you know. So if it hadn't been on the news that there was a COVID in the 19 crisis, I wouldn't have known about it.
Well, Sean's been great talking to you.
It has. We should do so when the mics aren't on occasionally.
Yeah, you're right. Sean McAuliffe, ladies and gentlemen.